This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. Going, everybody. You're listening to Loika Mania episode 50. My name is Pat Loika, and man, did you really think we were going to make it to 50? Because I there's a point where I really didn't believe we would make it this far, but we're here, and to kind of celebrate the occasion, I'm going to do this solo. And, you know, I'm going to talk about some books I picked up at the San Diego Con and that I think are quite great, and talk very briefly about a movie I just saw. Kind of like the old times, you know, but, you know, just be by myself. So let's not waste any more time, and let's get right to it. San Diego Comic-Con had a lot of great books that premiered there, a lot of great books that were exclusives. But there's one book that really stood out for me, one book that I was... there's two books that I'm really excited about that I picked up from the show. The first being Hark, a Vagrant by Kate Beaton. And Kate is someone that I follow on Twitter and on Google Plus. She has rapidly become one of my favorite cartoonists. She is very funny. I love her art style, the way she handles her facial expressions. It's just so wacky. And there's nothing wrong with wacky. That's exactly why I love it, you know. It's wacky. Her storytelling is great. Just the way she handles, you know, the way she draws is really something to behold. And despite how, you know, there's something about the way she draws eyes and just really faces. It's so great. And a lot of the comedy comes from that. And of course, combine that with her great, you know, her great comedic timing and her wit, and you have one amazing book. This book is, it's $20 from Drawn and Quarterly, from D&Q, rather. And I do like that it's classified as a humor/history book, which kind of works. And the book that debuted at Comic-Con is actually a limited edition. It comes with a book plate signed, and there's like 300 of these out there. And I'm very pleased to have gotten one. Apparently it sold out on the first day of the con too, so I was able to pick one for myself, and I got one for my buddy Zach over at DCBS, and I sent him his book. So this is a phenomenal book, and when it goes on wide release, I recommend that you look for it, because Kate Beaton is one of the really brilliant cartoonists of, you know, today, and I can only imagine how much better she's going to be over time, because she just keeps getting better. Her strips are funnier and more daring as it goes along. So check it out. There's a lot of bonus material in this book as well that were never, you know, never before, you know, released online, but they're in the book. They're in this book. So once again, Hark, a Vagrant from D&Q, $20. You cannot go wrong. It's a gorgeous hardcover, and you know, again, one of the best and one of the funniest cartoonists of today. So don't doubt this one. And the other book from the San Diego Con that I picked up that I think is worth talking quite a bit about is the artist edition for Walt Simonson's Thor, released by IDW in conjunction with Marvel. This is a stunning book. It collects about 7 issues worth of Thor material. It includes the you know, the introduction of Better Ray Bill and that epic Scourge story. And looking at Walt Simonson's inked pages as they originally appear, printed on this great paper, is absolutely phenomenal. It's so eye opening because you look at this stuff and you see the skill in Simonson's work. You see the skill and how effortlessly it looks under his hands. You look at every line. You look at every correct. You see every line in there. You see all the blue lines. You see the correction ink. You know, the corrections over it. You see the lettering, the pasting, and all that stuff. Everything is on these pages, and it's just such a unique look at one of the most beloved runs in comic history. You know, as someone who adores Walt Simonson's work and adores his work ethic especially, it is a revelation to look at his pages in this form. It's just such a wonderful thing to behold. I mean, we are so lucky, you know, as comic fans or readers, that we have the opportunity to see this. And the paltry $100 really is nothing, because what you're getting inside, you're pretty much owning the entire issue's original art, even though it's not, you know, the original art itself, but it's just as good. Just looking at those pages is something else. It's inspiring. It's awe-inspiring, and it's intimidating, you know, to see this guy was doing this stuff, he was doing this caliber of work way back then. And you can only imagine how this book, all these issues, all these pages have influenced people throughout the years. Seriously, guys, if you have a chance to get any of these artist edition books from IDW, buy them, because IDW does phenomenal work. They do some of the best collected editions out there. And you guys know me. I mean, I'm an unabashed Marvel guy. But when it comes to collections, I don't think anyone can top IDW right now. You know, between this and they just announced some new artist editions, actually. Like, you know, there's a Wally Wood EC one coming up. There's a John Romita Sr. Spider-Man. I mean, how great is that to see those John Romita Sr. Spider-Man pages in this size, in the way they were originally drawn? It's unheard of. Again, back to IDW. A couple other books of theirs that came out that I want to talk about is the Transformers All Hail Megatron Omnibus. That book is a monster. And once again, it's really well designed, like the Transformers IDW collections. Really well designed cover. The insides, of course, are great. The paper is heavy. The coloring really pops. There's like a lot of bonus material as well. I mean, IDW, seriously, is the king of the collected edition right now. And, you know, I mean, there's very few that can touch what they're doing right now. I mean, I can see, you know, a few Absolutes here and there. There's some Image books here and there that come out that's fantastic as well. And of course, the Marvel Omnibus and the art books are phenomenal too. But seriously, IDW rules all right now with their collected editions. They've been winning all kinds of awards for the work they've been putting into these. And you got guys like Scott Dunbier, who really is pushing their game up. You really should check out IDW stuff and books like the Thor Artist Edition and the All Hail Megatron Omnibus. You really cannot go wrong. It's, you know, again, you will thank me for this once you buy these books and you realize how great they are. Kind of spread some love around, though. I picked up the art of Captain America from Marvel. And, of course, this is art from the movie. You know, it has like the concept sketches and various design art and all that stuff. And, of course, posters and the ad campaigns and all that. All of that stuff is in there. And it is quite phenomenal to see all of this work, all the variations of the Cap costume before they settled on what they ended up with. I mean, they were even designing, you know, the jacket he wears when he wanted to be inconspicuous. There's a lot of stuff in the book, lots of fascinating art, lots of concepts and things that you're kind of glad they didn't go with. And at the same time, you see the evolution of, you know, what ended up becoming the movie. So if you're looking for an art book to check out, try the Art of Captain America, printed by Marvel. It's pretty fantastic. And one last book, because we have quite a bit to talk about here, because I have a bunch of questions to answer, and I want to try to not go over an hour, because last episode I made you guys, you know, go through almost 3 hours worth of stuff, which I hope you did enjoy. At least the feedback I've been getting has been great. Another book I want to quickly talk about is the Age of X hardcover from Marvel. This is one of those, this type of hardcover I like. You know, it collects the entire storyline. Nothing's missing. It's everything's in order. Because sometimes you collect a hardcover and you collect stories into a hardcover. Sometimes there's bits that are missing that kind of help the story. And it looks like they collected everything in here, similar to what they did with War of Kings, where they put everything, including the tie-ins, into the main hardcover. This is something I'd like to see more of. I would like to see some... I mean, Marvel has been putting out a lot of good hardcovers based on their events. They should be throwing in, you know, like any side issues, like any part... any tie-ins that are kind of important to the main story. I mean, a good example, actually, would be... Secret Invasion. It'd be cool to do Secret Invasion and you do an omnibus where you start with the infiltration stuff and then end up with the main story. I think that adds a lot more context and makes the story a lot stronger because you're reading it all in one sitting. You know, I'd like to see more hardcovers like that, similar to this Age of X book and the War of Kings book that came out a couple years back. So, yeah, check that out. It's good stuff. And actually, I want to throw one more book in there. Turf by Jonathan Ross and Tommy Lee Edwards. Phenomenal book. Great presentation. It's oversized, so you need to, you know, so you could kind of really look at Tommy Lee Edwards' art. It's quite apparent that this book is something he's always wanted to do because this is some of his best work. Jonathan Ross, his writing's a little dense. There's a lot to read, but you know, it's very well written. It's very cleverly written as well. So give them a shot. They're from Image. Hardcover should be out there in general, in pretty much everywhere. I was lucky enough to be able to get my hardcover copy directly from Tommy Lee Edwards. I got to sign and sketch in it too, and I'm very happy with this book. I tried the first issue when it first came out, and I decided to wait for the hardcover or trade because, you know, there's really no point in buying the same thing twice anymore, and I've been trying to cut back on doing that. That's such a bad habit. Anyway, yeah, check this book out. It's called Turf by Jonathan Edwards and Jonathan Ross and Tommy Lee Edwards. You see what's happening to my state of mind here. Next up, I want to talk very briefly about a movie I saw this week that really, that really delivered in all levels. I saw The Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and it was well written. It was beautifully shot. I thought the directing was great, and I thought, it really, really did a good job rebooting that franchise. Fox has been on a roll, actually. If you think about it, this year they have. They rebooted X-Men, or did a revamp, whatever you want to call it, with X-Men First Class. Then now they did the same thing with Planet of the Apes. This is becoming a very good year for Fox, and I could not believe I'm saying that, but Fox, good job with these movies. James Franco was quite good. John Lithgow was great, and honestly, a very heartbreaking role. But he was really good in this one. And the animatronics or CG, whatever they used to animate the apes, was just phenomenal. There's a couple apes in there that I see there, and I think, man, that could be an awesome Gorilla Grodd. Then there are a lot of really cool moments here, a lot of great scenes, a lot of awesome stuff with apes. And it's a perfect way to start this franchise. You know, everything is explained logically. Everything makes sense. And you just got to wonder where the story is going to go next. I mean, obviously, they'll probably take the path we know. But, you know, they have all kinds of possibilities, all kinds of openings, you know, to do even better things. So, again, without spoiling anything, be sure to watch Rise of the Planet of the Apes because it's really good, really, really well written. And it's a damn good-looking film, too. So check that out. So when I found out I was going to be doing this podcast, this episode anyway, that it was going to be an anniversary episode, I decided to do something a little different and ask people for questions. So I'll get right to answering these questions because there's quite a bit of them here for me to deal with. First question comes from Mr. Mark Bosco, and he asks, how about that Chinese buffet pizza? Has it improved in quality since we last spoke? How are the sideburns doing? He's referring to a statement I made with regards to Chinese buffets, and the rule is that if there's pizza available at this buffet, then this buffet sucks, because if you are a Chinese buffet and you're not good at serving Chinese food, you can serve pizza, which you can't possibly screw up, and more often than not, they're not good. And Mark Chinese buffet pizza, still not good. So I don't recommend ever trying it. As far as the sideburns go, they're just there, you know. nothing really special. So I hope that satisfies you. The next question is from Alan Ayres Rebo, and he asks, when the heck will you visit Toronto? Just kidding, but it would be awesome if you did visit up north. I've always wanted to visit Toronto. It's one of those cities that I've kind of liked, you know, just from reputation, and it has a really cool comic scene. So I've always thought it would be fun to visit there. It's just that, you know, the schedules just never work out. I don't know, maybe next year. I would like to hit up, you know, Fan Expo, because I hear that's a fun show, and maybe 2012 would be the year where Pat Loika makes his first appearance in Canada, or Canadia, as I like to call it. And then I will take over, and you will all bow to me. Number two is a wrestling question. This is purely speculation, but do you feel that with the Cena CM Punk angle on Raw being as hot as it is, pun intended, do you think it might overshadow the attention to SmackDown? Do you think that brand could use a boost? The Orton Christian angle isn't that bad, but personally, I'd like to see Daniel Bryan take center stage at some point. Well, I don't know. I mean, SmackDown, just by virtue of its existence, is going to be secondary to Raw, because it's just, I don't know. It feels like a B show. I mean, they've kind of, you know, put a really good set of performers in there recently, but It still feels that way. I think the writing is nowhere near as good as, well, saying good is kind of, you know, kind of misleading. But I think the writing is better on Raw because it is their bigger show and it attracts more ratings. So SmackDown kind of suffers because of that. But I don't know. I think the Christian Orton angle is great. I like what they're doing with Daniel Bryan. And there's some stuff going on in SmackDown, too, that I think is better than what's going on in Raw. But really, it just falls on which show gets the more ratings. And right now, it's Raw. So, you know, I have really no answer for that. And then the third question is, for your various con experiences, what are the essential tips for a future creator setting up a booth? I'm sure this question has been repeated, but I would appreciate your perspective on this. Well, with regards to con experiences and the booth, here's the thing. If you're going to get a table at Artist Alley, be sure to fill up your table with a lot of stuff that people can look at. You have to have stuff there so that people will stop and look. Of course, have clear graphics and banners behind you so that they know who you are. And of course, an image of what you do is always essential so that people know exactly what books you do and there won't be any kind of confusion. And of course, sitting behind the table, you make sure you always have enough supplies, you know, whether it be water, hand sanitizer, or just something to eat, or just, you know, like extra pen nibs or erasers or whatever. Just be sure you have everything, because when you're stuck at a table, I mean, when you're on a table, especially if you're on your own, it can be difficult. It can also be kind of a hassle because you don't, you know, if you need to leave for something and need to borrow something, you may, you know, you would run the risk of losing stuff because you have to step away from the table. And while your neighbors may be nice enough to watch for you, they can't always be keeping their eyes on your stuff because they have to sell their own stuff as well. So keep that in mind. And I think the biggest thing I want to advise you is, when you're there, look like a pro, smile, and just, you know, conduct business, because the way you present yourself is the way people will perceive you. You know, especially, you know, first impressions are important in this business. And when you're sitting at a con behind a table, they really want to see, you know, they want someone who will engage them, someone who will, you know, talk with them, and you know, look at, and they want you to look at them as more than just a sale, but, you know, You know what I mean. So, yeah, just be professional, look professional, and be prepared. Always have your supplies. That's really all that matters. And, of course, you got to make sure your presentation is there. So that's it. Of course, you could email me, and we can talk about this even more. Thank you for the comments. And he says here, thanks for the show and what you do. Finally, comics and wrestling is a podcast. But keep up this great work, and I look forward to hearing more. I appreciate that. It's always good to hear good feedback. you know, this podcast is something I started because I wanted to talk about stuff that I want to talk about, you know, stuff that's fun, and I want to talk to people I like and talk about stuff I like. And that's what we're all about here, and I'm, you know, and that's never going to change. In the last couple of months, I know we've been doing less of the pure review episodes like what we did earlier in this episode, but you know, I'm trying to bring a little bit more of that back, but there's just a lot of cool people to talk to, and a lot of people in the industry have been very gracious enough to say yes when I asked them if they want to come on the show. So I appreciate this. I appreciate the pros and all the cool people behind the biz who've gone on. I appreciate all the friends who've come on board, and it's just a good time, and I'm glad I'm able to share that with other people. Next question is from Chris Mays, who is the person responsible for the banner? I mean, for the cover art for each episode. He's a brilliant designer who you guys should keep an eye out for. His first question is: what do you enjoy more, writing or illustrating? And you can't say both. Honestly, right now I'd rather write. I don't know, illustration. And I'm going to be very honest. I'm going to bare my soul here. I think the illustration game has kind of slipped me by, I think. There's so many talented people out there, so many people who are miles above what I'm capable of doing right now. And whether they be aided by technology or they're just that gifted, you know, they've had that. Of course, I've had issues with my hand for quite some time now. So I'd rather write. I'd rather come up with stuff for people to draw rather than be the guy drawing them, because it's to be honest, it's less labor intensive, and I feel like it kind of works, it kind of gives my imagination and my mind a better workout anyway. So I would go with writing, but you know, I'm still there illustrating a couple things. You'll find out more about what I'm working on soon enough though. Next is: who or what is most influential on you? Again, another tough question. I'm influenced by a lot of people I read, obviously. As far as comics go, I mean, you got guys like Fraction, Brubaker, Bendis, Cornell. A lot of these guys have been very influential because their characters are so well realized, and I would like to write that way. You know, as far as art goes, I mean, there's so many people that kind of influenced me. I mean, from when I was younger, John Buscema was one of my favorites. George Perez, Ron Lim, even, because and then even for to a certain degree, even Bart Sears, because I remember reading his Brute and Babe art, his art column over at the Wizard magazine back when I was younger, and that was something that I tried to study from way back then. But you know, these days, you know, I try to be influenced by cartoonists who do simpler stuff. Like I study a lot of Jeff Lemire stuff, for example. Study a lot of Eric Powell, and there's so many guys, and I'm gaining even more appreciation for, you know, artists who, like, especially Walt Simonson and Howard Chaykin. Those guys are like my heroes right now. Those guys are the ones I pretty much worship, because there's just something about their work. They're such great storytellers, you know. And next is: who is Chris Mays and why does he rock so hard? Chris Mays is, honestly, he is my best friend. He is like a brother to me. He is the guy who designs the banners for this show. I mean, the cover art. And he is he's drawn a couple of stories I've written. Seriously, one of the most talented dudes I know. You guys should check out his stuff at chrismays.com. Check out his online portfolio and hit him up, because this dude is so talented. And I wish he was working in the comics industry full time, because I think he will be amazing here. I think. And the last question he has is: will you take me to Funky Town? No, that's a little. You're asking for too much here, Chris. I will not take you to Funky Town, so you can go screw yourself. Next up is from R. Scott Vaughn, who asks: who is the best around? Why, R. Scott, it's me. You don't need to look any further. Len Wallace has two questions he asks. By the way, Len Wallace is the critically acclaimed writer of the Oni Press graphic novel Love Buzz. So check that out. I'm sure he'll want me to pimp that anyway. He asked me, what is a mineral that the body does not need? And that's simple. It's lead. And also, what sound does it make when you snap a dude's neck? I think it goes snicked or something like that. I'm not sure. I don't really pay attention to that. You and your nickel plate obsession. Len, you need to calm down. You need to seek help. So, sorry. Next is from William Childress. He asks, when Hal Jordan went all badass and became Parallax in the Emerald Twilight storyline, how come he didn't whip up some kryptonite with his ring and kill the big blue Boy Scout? I don't know, because he's Hal Jordan and he's not that bright. And sorry, Hal fans. You know, you guys know I'm not a big Hal Jordan fan. I'm a Kyle Rayner guy, so I will be as insulting as I can with that answer. Next question is also from William. He asks, will Marvel ever bring back their most awesome character ever, Rocket Raccoon? I think he's due for a comeback because he is appearing in the next update for Ultimate Marvel vs. Marvel vs. Capcom 3. He is one of the characters there, and I hope to God that he has a super move that summons Groot, or else it would be a failure. But yeah, I think Rocket Raccoon is due for some he's due to be hit by the spotlight again, and we'll see him in the next few years or so. Evan Valentine, a wonderful former guest and brilliant comedian, has asked, what is my favorite Vertigo series? That's a loaded question, Evan. I'm going to say it's a toss-up between three books. And it's going to be Preacher, 100 Bullets, or Northlanders. Yeah, Northlanders. You're probably shocked. Yes, Northlanders. I love that book. And it's one of the best, most underrated books out there. People should be checking it out. But yeah, Preacher, for obvious reasons, that book has had such an influence on me. One of the I have kind of gotten a mantra from that book, you know. And that's when the Duke tells Jesse that you have to be one of the good guys because there's way too many of the bad. That's something I try to live by every day. So Preacher, 100 Bullets is just such a rich, brilliant crime book, and I love it. It's some, you know, it's two of the best storytellers in the game, just doing what they do best. And Azzarello and Riso, I'm so glad they get to work together again, and they are phenomenal. So much love for that book and for them. Next up is William Childress once again. Why can't the comic book industry truly commit themselves when it comes to killing off a major character? If you want to kill off a character to sell issues, that's fine, but keep them dead. And he kind of goes on a bit here, but you know, he basically says, why can't dead mean dead? You know, why can't dead really be dead? The answer is very simple, William. You kill off a character to, you know, bring impact to a story that you're telling at the time you're telling the story. You bring the character back because the time has come for the character to be brought back. And it's comic books. You know, real life is one thing. Comic books are another. And basically, you're dealing with fictional characters. You could always bring them back. That just comes with the territory. I mean, yeah, I would like more realistic comics when people die and never come back. But you know what? This is fantasy. And with fantasy, you bend the rules every now and then. And when enough people clamor for a character to come back, they will come back because, you know, the comic publishers, they're businesses, and they would like to make money, and they would like to please their fans. So it's as simple as that. That's pretty much it. How the hell? And another question. Wow, that's a lot of questions for you, William. You're banned next time I get questions. This is the last question from you I will answer, though, and it is, how the hell does IDW get all the cool licenses just so that they can screw them up? I don't think they're screwing them up at all. I think their Transformers and G.I. Joe stuff have been fantastic. I have not read True Blood or any of the other licensed books they have, but as far as the Transformers and G.I. Joe stuff is concerned, I think they're batting 1,000. They're fantastic. And I continue to enjoy and buy them. So, yeah, that's it for that. Another question here is from Ryan Holiday, and he goes, is there a C-level character that you'd like to see pushed to the big leagues, kind of like how Luke Cage and the Taskmaster have been? That is a great question. There are a lot of C-level characters out there that are great. For me, oh, man, that's a tough question. You know what, though? I think they could turn Razor Fist into a badass. Seriously, this guy has blades for hands, and he wears basically a diaper, but he's such a badass because he's Razor Fist. I could, if you let me do a Razor Fist comic, it would be the most awesome thing ever. That's all I'm saying. And the last question I have here is from Gregory Dickens, and he's asking me, if Ultimate Peter Parker was going to die, wouldn't it have been better to do so during Ultimatum when he saved New York from a flood, demons, and the Hulk had salvaged his reputation to one J. Jonah? I don't know, Gregory. I don't think I'm the right person to answer this question.
Excuse me, Patrick.
Oh, hey, it's Brian Michael Bendis. How are you doing, Brian?
What are you doing in my fetish chat room?
I was checking out your fetish chat room, of course.
I didn't want to affirm you too. That's awesome, man. We should do this down in San Diego.
Man, you missed out this year. There's some crazy shit this year.
Sure there was. All right, what was the question?
Gregory here is asking me if Ultimate Peter Parker was going to die, if you knew he was going to die, wouldn't it have been better for you to kill him off during Ultimatum when he saved New York from a flood and all that stuff?
Our plans were already on the table around Ultimatum, and the thought really did occur. I did sit with it for, I think, a couple of weeks, but it just wasn't time yet. I had other things I wanted to do with Peter that I did do over the course of the next year or two, and it wasn't time. You kind of got to feel it. You got to kind of trust your instincts. And the characters tell you when it's time a lot of the time. I know that sounds very weird to say out loud. Other writers know what I'm talking about. But they'll let you know. You got to listen.
Yeah. You know? And also, I mean, if you had killed him off back then, we would not have gotten all these cool issues with Iceman and the Human Torch. That whole dynamic of everyone living in May's house was...
I had written down in my first couple of years on Ultimate Spider-Man, I had written down Ultimate Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends with a big, how could I possibly make that happen, right? And it took 10 years, but I finally got to a place where I could do it. And then literally I was sitting there, as this gentleman points out, at the end of Ultimatum, and behind curtain number one was I could kill him. And number two was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And I went, you know what? The answer is clear. So that was that. And then here we are today. So I feel my instinct was right this time. I'm very good. My comic book instincts are very good. My instincts with women always not so good. My wife doesn't seem affected by it. But in general, in my early days, I would be like George Costanza and have to do the opposite of what I thought was the right thing to do.
Ultimately it worked out well. Now, speaking of Ultimate Spider-Man, though, since I have you on, I think I'd like to take a little bit of time to talk about the big bombshell that was in the news all week long, and that is the introduction of Miles Morales as the new Ultimate Spider-Man. First of all, from where you are, it must be hell of a feeling to be part of this because this is pretty historical. I mean, this character, this iconic character, you get to put someone else in that character's shoes, and of course it's a minority character now. And how was that like for you this week?
Well, it was, first of all, me and Joe have been planning this quietly for a long time. Mm-hmm. Joe always has, you've met Joe. Joe has this, he just looks at me and goes, this is going to be huge. And I go, and I'm always, and my instinct is, that's not really our call, whether this is huge or not. Like, there's a lot of things that could make this not huge. You know, like, literally, it was a crazy slow news week, I guess, or people were just sick of reporting about the debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. So we hit this, like, slow news day mother load. Just before New Hampshire. Like, literally, if you wait 2 weeks and the New Hampshire primaries are going on, we're not on the cover of USA Today. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was thrilled. It was completely delightful. I will tell you that Glenn Beck and his whacked-out nonsense that he said was the highlight of my whole year, and I had a very awesome year. I literally was like... And I laughed, and then by the end of the day, I literally, a Fraction and Kelly Sue came over that night, and I turned to them, I go, I gotta tell you, I think it may be my favorite thing that's ever happened in my career. I know that sounds insane. I'm really, really happy about this Glenn Beck thing. And then Matt said, and I was having trouble thinking ahead of my face. Matt goes, oh, wait till tomorrow when all the op-ed pieces and Keith Olbermann and all this other crap has. And I go, that's not going to last that long. And he goes, oh, no, Glenn Beck just made this a home run. And and lo and behold, he was right. It never ended all day. So I'm grateful because, listen, beyond my ego being satiated for close to 6 hours, which is the longest it's ever been, I was thrilled that something's out there that may get people into comic book stores, even not just for my book, but for, because once a good store gets someone in the door, there's other stuff to show them.
Yeah, you know? And there's always a possibility of getting even more sales through the digital comics apps.
True. But, lapsed, I heard from a ton of lapsed readers who just kind of said, yeah, I would love to read some comics. So it was very, so on that level, huge, cool. I love the conversation. I'm going to just choose to focus on the 90% of the conversation that was pretty positive. I will say I was, I learned a lot. I learned that the comic book audience, they were only annoyed about the fact that they felt something was being spoiled, but nothing is being spoiled. And number two, that, Peter Parker's not there. And those things I totally get. Compare that rational thought and passion about comic books to the madness that was the comment section of the USA Today.
Yeah.
I didn't know they had a comment section. I literally went like 2 days without even knowing it was there. I go, sometimes I'm sure you feel the same, Pat. You could see a comic book message board and just feel bad.
Oh, yeah.
About our community. But then you see what the real world community is like, and you go, oh my God, that's a nightmare. Oh, that's 50 times worse.
Yeah, so, there are all kinds of very, very screwed up people posting in those comment sections.
But I couldn't believe it. It was pretty hilarious. And people, but you know what I always said? You could tell from their comment how good a reader they are, like how much they comprehended the article they just read, or the comic book they just read. You can tell from the way they relate back to it. You go, you know what, this article may have been above you. No offense, mm-hmm. but maybe you shouldn't be commenting. So, but yeah, it was very, very cool. There's no downside as far as I'm concerned. I'm very, very proud of the comic book that's coming. I'm many issues into the new run on Ultimate Spider-Man, so I have a really good handle on the character. So I'm very, very excited about people seeing what we do for the first year and proving, hopefully, that it is all about character and the only aspects of race that have to do with the story is how it defines that character, not how it defines the story itself.
I'm really looking forward to it, man. And the fact that you're working with Sarah Pacelli and Justin Ponser, and that it's going to be a beautiful book.
Sarah is sitting in her studio in Italy, going, "What the hell?" Every 5 seconds, you get an email. What is going on? I mean, like Italian newspapers and magazines are looking for her. She hasn't been in comics that long. So it's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, but I'm glad that people are discovering her. I think there's going to be a lot of press kind of introducing her and what she does a little more clearly to people over the next couple of weeks, which I think you will really like. I think there's a couple of pieces coming out. I forget which websites, kind of showing how she puts together a page, which
that's fantastic.
Yeah. And just showing who she is as an artist and introducing her. And she's as fascinating as Alex. I consider the most, one of the most fascinating people out there, so I'm excited for that. I think you'll enjoy that. I think a lot of people listening will.
Yeah, and she has such a unique style. She has a very very clean, very it's very dynamic. It sounds cheesy. I'm saying dynamic, but it is a very dynamic style. She conveys movement really well and facial expression. So she's perfect for this book.
Yeah, I'm very, 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 very happy we're doing this.
Okay. So. And one other thing I want to talk about real quick, that's something that you're happy about. The Powers TV show, since last time we had you on, they've really gone you guys just finished the pilot, actually, at this point, right?
I finished the pilot. Today was a very good day because today the Critics Association had their get-togethers, and today was FX's day to kind of put on their show, and the president of FX said some very, very nice and promising things about Power specifically, which he had said to me privately, but it's nice that he said them publicly. It was pretty cool. So the pilot is shot. It just wrapped earlier in the week this week. The dailies are gorgeous. The acting is fantastic. I am I'm very hopeful. Of course, not my decision, but I'm very hopeful that it will see the light of day. But I tell you, I'm so happy with the experience that we had, but both individually and me and Mike together being on set together, that I'm selfishly don't even care if anyone sees it. I had such a good time. I don't need anyone to see it to make it a better time. But I do think we'll see. But I'm feeling good. It's got to cut together though. You never know.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. Do they have the? What's this? Do they have a date as to when this could possibly be showing? Or
yeah, they do. I'm not allowed to say. But
okay, understand.
But you know, it hasn't even been edited together yet. So the editing starts on Monday, and then there's over the course of the next few weeks, there's a lot of different versions that have to hit certain dates, and then and then they'll make their decision. But boy, what a great experience! Just on a personal level, on a creative level, it was really, really great. It was something, you know, me and Mike waited a long, long time for, and to sit on the set that looks exactly like the comic book and watch actors blow the roof off the place with writing that's on the same level as The Shield is really something, man. Really, really great experience.
Yeah, I'm following both of you guys on Twitter. Actually, it's been really, really cool to see you guys reacting to everything around you. You guys were posting set pictures, and Mike was even sketching while he was there. Yeah, clearly, you guys are both really energized by this whole experience.
Yeah, that was some major bragging going on all week, and I apologize.
Hey, you know what? It's like the realization of, like, you know, like over 10 years of development, you know. I think you guys kind of earned the right to brag about it.
Yeah, my manager, David Engel, who's on Twitter, too. I mean, we've been together for so many years and working towards this, and you're finally letting it happen. We just decided to just enjoy the shit out of it. You know what I mean? Worry about the other stuff later. Just let's enjoy this. So, yeah, it was cool, man. Really, really cool. I highly recommend if anyone can get a TV show made out of their comic book by a bunch of people that won Peabody Awards, I really recommend it. It's a really great experience.
Awesome. All right. So I think there's a lot of casting announcements and all that stuff, but I think the one that stands out for me right now is still Trip Hammer, because that actor is was awesome in Lost.
And it was so cool, and you're talking about Titus, and he walked right up to me the first day I met him. He goes, "I'm a huge comic book guy. Gene Colan is my man." They're talking about the really esoteric Captain America comics that he loved. And then it was funny because he mentioned the Exiles, the Captain America villains, which I just used, of all things, I just used them in the Avengers. Mm-hmm. And then he goes, "I love the Exiles." And I go, "I just wrote the Exiles." He goes, "You lie." And I go, "I promise you." I just, and he goes, "Baldini?" And I go, "Yes, I just did Baldini." So it was very cool. And then he goes, "Oh, I love Gene Colan." I go, "Oh, I know. He just passed away. It's so sad." He goes, "He died?" And I go, "Oh, I'm the asshole. I have to tell you that, yeah."
Oh.
No, it was very cool. Everyone was super, super awesome. Lucy, I can't wait for you guys to see what Lucy looks like as Dina Pilgrim. It is startling. It's really something.
I can't wait. She's you know, I've seen her in a couple roles before, and I think she could pull it off.
It's the biggest transformation of everybody. Mm-hmm. You're going to be like, "Oh my God, she's Dina." It's really something. Yeah. Oh,
well, all right. Well, that was, man, thanks for all that. I can't wait to read, you know, the new Ultimate Spider-Man. I can't wait to see Powers. Hopefully, you know, that comes out sooner than later, because, I'm really psyched because of all the stuff I've been hearing, and of course the stuff you guys have been posting on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, where can people find you online, Brian?
What? Brian M. Bendis. Oh yeah, at Brian M. Bendis. Accept no substitutes. I'm a certified Twitterer, so if you don't see the little blue check by my name, it ain't me.
How do I get verified?
I had to whine and bitch like a motherfucker. I just cried and cried and cried. In my heart, I had decided that Blue Check would validate me as a person, a human being, and a member of society. Marvel ended up getting it for me. I did have what you really need is, sadly, you need a couple of people pretending to be you.
Someone has to fake it.
And, yeah, they have to fake it to help helps push it through.
So we need to find fake Pat then.
Yeah, I got fake Pat. You got a fake Pat on there. That's a good.
All right. And of course, the message board is over at jinxworld.com. And
best support is rocking. Yes.
Yeah, lots. There have been a lot of new people coming in.
Yes, if someone steals your bicycle, there is hundreds of people on the Jinx World message board who will not sympathize with you.
Okay. Speaking of your bike, Brian, do you have a message for the person who could have possibly stolen your bicycle?
Die in a fire, you fuckhead. So annoying. It's not even that expensive a bicycle. It's just I had it perfect. I had the seat where I wanted it. The gears were perfectly the way I like them. It was my favorite bike I've ever had. It was just really a great bicycle. And, so I'm annoyed. So what are you going to do? But you know what? I had you know, Portland's pretty bad about that, and I haven't lost one in about 8 years. I lost three the first year I was in Portland. I lost one right outside the Oni Press. I was literally standing talking to James Lucas Jones, and I saw some guy just run at my bike, take off. I got spot. I lost the other one at a screening of Sin City. Show you how long ago it was. I went into like a press screening, came out at noon, and my bike was gone. And the woman at the counter goes, "Yeah, I saw someone screwing with it. I didn't know what they were doing." I'm like, "Duh!" So, yeah. So So what are you gonna do? I know this is more than you wanted to hear. But, Pat, I'm here because I love you, and congratulations on your 50th anniversary. What was your favorite, and I'm not fishing, what was your favorite episode?
Oh, man, that's
rough. Other than
you know what, I'm just...
You got on the show that you didn't think you'd get. You knew you'd get me and Matt, and who did you get that you went, "Holy cow, I can't believe I got them on the show"?
Oh, man, that's kind of a rough question, because... To be quite honest, I wasn't quite sure I was going to be able to get Ed Brubaker on because here's the thing, right? Whenever Ed and I scheduled to do it, something came up and we had to reschedule. And we were rescheduling for about 3 weeks. And at that point, I was like, "Oh, I don't think it's going to happen." And then all of a sudden, it just happened where we were scheduled for something. We had to postpone by a couple hours. And all of a sudden, I got an email from him saying, "We'll do it now." But I was at the bank or something. And I was in the middle of something. So I had to run back home, right, Hop onto the computer, and get recording started. And I had to get Adam on so that we could record. So, yeah.
That reminds me, if anybody wants to see... a middle-aged man turned into an old man in front of their eyes, follow Ed Brubaker on Twitter. The old man tweets. It's like Ed from the future tweeting, "Why this government doesn't work at all?" Anyway.
That's not how he sounds like. I mean, if you could, yeah, I think you should get Matt to do his impersonation to do that.
"This government doesn't work at all."
That's actually pretty close.
That's my imitation of Matt doing Ed. It's not even imitation. All right, man, I'm going to go write. I'm actually writing the first issue of next summer's Big Hoo-Ha tonight.
Oh, so wow. Okay.
I'm going to do that.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's called Age of Squirrel Girl. It's a whole thing. But no, it's a pretty big deal, and you guys will hear about it later in the year. Probably. I would like to not be in the news anymore this week, so I'm not going to say anything else.
Excellent, sir. Well, again, thank you for thank you for doing this show on such short notice. And again, I appreciate it. I look forward to what's coming next.
No problem, man. Talk to you soon. I'll see you online.
Yeah, take care, sir, and have fun.
You got it, man.
All right. Bye-bye. And there you have it, folks. Mr. Brian Michael Bendis making a very special guest cameo of the show. Brian and his board really set this whole thing, this got this whole thing going. And without that, I would probably not have had the online presence that I have now, and I would not be able to do this show without that. Before I close out, I just want to say thank you to every single person who has listened to this show, because you know, it's nice to know that there's folks out there who want to hear what I have to say or want to hear me talk to people that, you know, that you'd probably be more interested to listen to anyway than me. Big thanks, of course, to my co-hosts, Adam Witt, Antonio Cuneo, Simon Hausner, and, of course, even Chris Mays, who is here every so often. Big thanks to everyone who has ever come, you know, who has ever been on the show. And I'm going to name names because, you know what, I think it's just right. And I'm going to indulge myself since this is the 50th episode. So big thanks to Mr. Derek Coward, who handles getting this thing out there. He is a very hardworking gentleman, and he runs a very tight ship with all these podcasts that are under the Comic Book Noise family, the Deliberate Noise Network, which you guys should check out because there's a lot of really cool shows here. Aside from Derek, want to thank also Mr. David Price, who I was originally part of his show, Marvel Noise, and I've kind of branched out and started doing this from out of that. And I still need to fulfill my obligations for that show because I'm pretty terrible at it right now because of this. Of course, big thanks to everyone who has ever been a guest on this show. From Mr. Brian Michael Bendis to Ed Brubaker, Rick Remender, Jason Aaron, Jeff Parker, Christos Gage. And, God, there's so many. Jonathan Hickman, Matt Fraction, Tony Fleece, and then, of course, the great Gabriel Hardman. You know, the new our pals from the convention episodes, like Albert Ching and Ernie Australia, Brian Lipsitz, Ali Coluccio. Again, so many really, really nice and really cool people who come onto the show to chat with me about all sorts of stuff. And again, thanks in advance. Well, you know, you're going to hear them soon, but you know, you haven't heard them yet. But I also had Paul Cornell, which will be in the next episode, by the way. And then there's Jeff Lemire after that, and Mark Brooks. This has been such a amazing, you know, such an amazing year for podcasting for me. I'm such a good time. I'm just thankful I'm able to do this, and I'm thankful that there's an audience for it. And I apologize if I'm kind of indulging myself here, but you know, it's this show wouldn't be where it is right now if not for all the people I just named. So thank you all for your contributions and for doing the show. And I guess that's it for me this week. Next week, like I mentioned, I will have Paul Cornell on. We will talk about the DC revamp. We're going to talk about his previous work for Marvel, like Captain Britain and MI-13 and Wisdom and a few other things here and there. You can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/PatLoika. And you can find me on Facebook, Google Plus, and every other social network you can think of. I am there except MySpace because nobody uses MySpace. And go to patloika.com for my blog, which is just, you know, my nonsense. And go to comicbooknoise.com/loikamania for everything about the podcast, including some there'll be some new stuff there because I haven't written anything for that blog in a while, and because I've been busy prepping for the San Diego Con. That should change momentarily. So again, thank you all for listening. Thank you for sticking around. Tell your friends about the show if you like it. Leave us a nice review on iTunes if you can. It would be greatly appreciated. And of course, once again, as always, the show is brought to you by cheapgraphicnovels.com, where you can get some really, really good prices on your graphic novels. And they pretty much have everything I talk about here. They're pretty damn good, really good service, really fast. So thank you again, cheapgraphicnovels.com. And that's it. Until then, I'll see you next week. You guys take care, take it easy, have fun, and just enjoy everything that's coming your way. Enjoy your comics, enjoy your movies, enjoy your TV. Because you know what? Life's too short to be angry about anything, and it's always good to have fun and enjoy what you got. So take it easy. Thank you.
Standing on my stone, don't you cry.